meeting as a matter of housekeeping. We will not be addressing item number 3 on our agenda tonight related to the homestead, nor will we be addressing item number 5, the amendment of the city code. But everything else that's been published, we will be addressing this evening. To begin our meeting, we'll start with our liaison report.
All right. Thank you, Chairman Garland, members of the Planning Commission, members of the public. So at the beginning of the meeting, we have a short liaison report basically talking about some land use items that would be of interest to the Planning Commission. So we go over these fairly quickly and briefly, and most of these will be very familiar to the Planning Commission. So last month, we had the Master Street and Trail Plan General Plan Amendment. These are the Master Streets and trails just south of Mitchie Lane and to the east side of Highway 1 or State Route 113. And so we looked at removing the dotted lines. These are future planned roads off the map, and then also some of the trails off the map. So the City Council did have a public hearing, considered all the information and the public comment, and they did approve those amendments to the master plan for both the trails and the roads. Any questions for staff on this one? The farm of Wilson Lane, Lot 4, this is another item one before the Planning Commission. This was a proposal in this 8-lot subdivision. These are roughly 1-acre lots. To adjust the building envelope on the larger lot in the subdivision that also has the open space. So this is the outline lot. It's in the northeast corner, and this is 2 acres in size. So on the plat, there was only one area where you could build structures, and that's this crosshatched area. The proposal was to move that crosshatched area more to the center of the lot, but also reduce the overall height of all structures down from 35 feet to 30 feet, measured from natural grade. There were some neighbors that showed up and some considerations on how those views would be impacted. Looks like, just based off of the information, it looks like because the house was lower, it really wouldn't impact any views from the neighbors. And so the City Council did approve that plat amendment. The Julian Subdivision plat amendment, this is one that we also looked at in the last couple of months. So this is a 2-lot subdivision. It's on Center Street on the west side of the road, just south of the church. And again, there's existing 2 lots. The proposal was to divide the northern lot into another lot. So this would become a 3-lot subdivision. This was a plat amendment / subdivision since they were creating a new lot. We did have public hearings on both items, and this was approved by the City Council to split off that lot on the north. The Marsing application for nightly rental, this is a conditional use permit, and this is over close to Harvest Restaurant, which is on First South and just south of Main Street. This property was included in the transient rental overlay district a couple of years ago. They're still in a residential zone, so it's still required a conditional use permit, and that's what the Planning Commission reviewed, and the City Council did also. We did have a public hearing, and it did create spark quite a debate about nightly rentals before the City Council. So that's high on their minds right now. The conditional use permit was approved by the City Council with some conditions, and so their next step is to apply for a transient rental unit license. So the next item is a code text amendment. This is something we reviewed in our last meeting. Regarding Heber Valley Special Service District and requiring will serve letters from any developer to go to HVSSD and get a will serve letter, and that assures that that property would be serviced once they develop the property by the sewer district. This code text amendment affected all the different types of subdivisions that we have in town, all the administrative approvals that we look at. So resort zone master plans, resort zone developments, planned unit developments, standard subdivisions, small subdivisions, rural preservation subdivisions, and density reduction subdivisions. So that is now included in the code as a requirement, and that will serve a letter will need to be submitted to the city with any new subdivision application. So that was approved by the City Council. And then another item, this is a plat amendment, and this item actually didn't go before the Planning Commission. Certain plat amendments go directly to City Council. Kind of the larger plat amendments, generally, those come to the Planning Commission. Some of the minor ones in our code go directly to City Council. And this is one that was considered a minor plat amendment since it didn't impact open space, it didn't impact density or any roads. So if it impacts any of those three items, they come to the Planning Commission. If they don't, they go directly to City Council. What was being proposed here is an amendment to the plat, and this is the lot down on Stringtown Road. This is a closer view of it. You can see Snake Creek runs down the center of this lot. This area is pretty low right off of Stringtown, and then it rises up fairly quickly to this area here. So this is much higher in elevation than what's on this side. The way that our code reads is it's a suggestion, really, for small-scale subdivision that there be a 50-foot setback off the edge of the floodplain. So federal code is you can't build in the floodplain. Our city code says you can't build within 50 feet of the floodplain. But for small-scale subdivisions, it isn't a requirement, but it's something that can be put on the plat. And in this case, it was put on the plat. What was being proposed was to adjust that line down parallel from 50 feet to 25, so there would still be a setback of 25 feet. But there was a limited building envelope up in this area. City Council looked at it the first time and they said, well, let's not move the whole line over, let's just adjust it where the future home would be built. So the developer came back and said, well, this would be the future home in this area. There'd need to be a turnaround for fire access emergency services. And so therefore, this structure should be in this location. But just adjusting that setback where the home is located. So that was approved by the City Council. Their next step is recording the amended plat. Are there any questions for any of the items on the liaison report or any other questions you've got?
What was the scuttle on the overnight rental? That wasn't brought up here. I mean, it went through pretty well, but I mean, just curious what the issue was. Usually I see it being more debate here and being shuffled right through in council. But
yeah, I can say City Council spent quite a bit of time on it and really started talking about just overall how the TROD works and some of the benefits for us. There were questions on what would happen if we got rid of the TROD. So quite a few different things were talked about in that meeting. No direction on changing anything at the moment. The City Council wants to look still at the overall zoning map, what we've talked about even here before the Planning Commission. So the thought is that will happen here in the next few months. Most likely we'll start that discussion. But the TROD will be part of that discussion, I'm sure.
Yeah, and just another question, was there any opposition from the neighbors at the City Council meeting? That's what I wondered. I was surprised that there was no one when we talked about it.
Yeah, there were several neighbors here, and they had different issues that were brought up, different concerns that were brought up. But regarding, with it being a conditional use permit, at that point in the process, it really has to be approved. It's really not discretionary at that point.
Yeah, the difference between that and what we're talking about tonight is that is in the TROD. This one is currently not in the TROD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Laura, did you have a...
No, I'm just looking at this. Is that going... The driveway does not cut across water at all? It just goes through trees?
There's a bridge across the water.
There is a bridge.
And there's quite a process to be able to do that.
Yeah, I was just wondering, since it's in a floodplain and there's federal restrictions, what kind of infrastructure are you allowed to put by the wetlands to hold up the bridge? Just wondering how that works.
So what happens is they have to hire a floodplain engineer, and they do a study called a zero rise analysis. So whatever they put in the floodplain can impact the overall height of the water during the 100-year flood. And so they put in a bunch of culverts and things so that same amount of water can cross through that property without impacting the floodplain. Because when you impact the floodplain, it usually impacts your property, but also the property upstream.
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering,
and
how that worked.
Yeah, so if you block off the stream, you flood your neighbor upstream when there's a flood. And so after going through that analysis, what they installed actually allowed the same amount of water to pass through without any problem with it backing up. And so there's a zero rise analysis, but if somebody is going to change the floodplain with some infrastructure they're putting in, they have to go through a whole different process. It's called a conditional letter of map revision, and then letter of map revision of actually modifying the floodplain. That's a very long and expensive process to do that. But yeah, we did watch this one very closely, both Wes and I, and we've worked with FEMA. They're well aware of the issue, same with the state floodplain coordinator. So these things are watched pretty closely.
Thank you.
Any other questions for staff?
I had one. Is it fair to ask what the vote was for the going back to the TROD, not the TROD, but this?
The Marsing?
The CUP.
The CUP, that was a unanimous yes. And it really, I mean, again, those are permitted uses at that point. Just a permitted use with reasonable conditions is the way to look at it. And so, yeah, that was unanimous.
I was just curious.
Okay, to continue with our meeting, Laura is going to offer us an invocation. After Laura's prayer, if everyone would please rise and join me in the reciting of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Father in Heaven, we're very thankful to be met here this evening, grateful for the many blessings, especially for the opportunity that we have to live in such a beautiful place as Midway. Please help each of us this evening that we might have clear minds, that we will understand the proposals before us, that we might make decisions that are in the best interest of our community. Again, we thank thee for all of our blessings, and we say this in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, our first item on the agenda tonight is to review and possibly approve the Planning Commission meeting minutes of September 9th, 2025. Melissa or Katie, any comments or corrections?
We didn't receive any. Does anybody have any questions or corrections?
Okay.
Is there a motion that we approve the meeting minutes from the last Planning Commission meeting?
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion by Andrew, second by Kim. And everyone will be voting tonight, and I will only vote if there's a tie. So, Sue Ellen?
Aye.
Kim?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Second item on the agenda, Mark and Wendy Richard and Dallin Twilliger are requesting a land use map amendment zone change of the Midway City land use map. They're requesting that the parcel located at 71 South 200 West be added into the Trinity Room Overlay District, otherwise known as TROD. The parcel is on 0.032 acres and is zoned R-1-7. Michael.
All right, thank you. Yeah, the city's received an application to amend our zone map. This is a legislative action, so there's broad discretion on the Planning Commission and the City Council's part to approve this type of action. This is an expansion of the Transient Rental Overlay District, or what we call the TROD quite often. The property is on 0.24 acres. It's zoned R-17, and the R-17 zone allows for long-term rentals of 30 days or more. Somebody could rent their entire home property. If they had an IEDU, they could actually rent the accessory dwelling unit. So there are some long-term rentals allowed on this property right now, but there's not any short-term rentals. It is contiguous to the C2 zone and to the TROD on the parcel's north boundary. So Harvest is located just to the north. That's in the commercial zone and in the TROD. The proposal is to include the property in the TROD. The property would remain zoned R-17, so there's not a proposal to rezone the underlying zone. That would stay the same. It would just be the TROD would cover this property, the overlay district. If it's included in the TROD, then short-term rentals of 2 to 30 days are allowed as a conditional use. And that conditional use and the requirements for the transient rental unit limits the number of people that can stay in the home, as we've talked about before in the CUP last month. There's an overall limit of 14 people that can stay in a home, but that's only if the fire code would allow that many people. And so if the overall number of bedrooms would only allow for 8, that would be the maximum number that would be allowed in that home. So, but the code does limit how many people can stay in the home. It also limits the number of vehicles. Basically, only 2 vehicles can be in the driveway. and there can't be any on-street parking. Now, if you have a four-car garage, you could have four cars in that. It just limits how many are visible. But two is the maximum visible amount of vehicles on site during short-term rentals. A locally licensed property management company must manage the home. And we have kind of a short list of local property managers. There's not very many. I think right now we've got maybe six that are licensed with the city. They would have to license with one or work with one of those property managers as part of the requirements of transient rental. There's a couple of reasons why our code is set up the way it is. One is to make sure the property manager is close by if there is a problem. That's probably the main reason right now that that's a requirement of the code. There is also a couple of home inspections. So our building inspector would inspect the home for any building code issues. If there's anything like a hot tub, for instance, then the health department gets involved and they have an inspection also. And then there's other requirements to the code. Those are just the main ones that I listed here. But if they are successful, they would still be under that transient rental code, which is pretty restrictive on what happens on the property. So this property is located just south of Main Street and just to the east of 2nd West. Here's a closer neighborhood view. You can see the Harvest Restaurant just north, Kringle's here, and then the Marcy property that we've looked at just across the street. And then a closer view again of the property. So on the property right now, there's a home and then there's a detached structure. The detached structure does have at least some living space in it. It's not a full living unit since there can't be a full living unit in a detached accessory structure on a parcel of this size. And so really this property is just one dwelling unit is the way that it's looked at in the code. So here's a copy of our zoning map, and you can see we've got the C2 and C3 zones, the commercial zones. And then you can see this dark blue line that goes around pretty much all of the commercial zones except for this little spot up here, and that was where South Hill was rezoned. But generally the C2 and the C3 zones coincide with the overlay zone of the dark blue line. So what's being proposed is to extend that dark blue line down around this property, and this is Harvest here. And so if approved, this blue line would wrap around this piece and become a peninsula. Now, the Marsing property was rezoned, and you'll notice the blue line actually comes down and encompasses this property right now. I need to go through and have that map adjusted. It has not taken place. So really, the blue line comes over to here and straight across. With this proposal, the blue line would jut down and wrap around this property. So some discussion points. Transient rental units are good sources of tax revenue. Something to consider for sure. So every time there is a short-term rental, there's transient rental tax that is gathered. That is gathered by the state and then sent back to the city. And it does end up being a significant portion of our budget. The other thing is the resort tax, and there are, I think, 24 communities in Utah that qualify for the resort tax now. These are communities that are heavy regarding visitors to the community, and the idea is that the state has allowed a 1% sales tax in those communities to help offset the cost for infrastructure use. So roads are used more because you have more visitors. And so the idea is we get that extra tax to help pay for the impact of visitors into our community. The resort tax ends up being about a sixth of our budget for the city, so it is an important issue. There's also residual sales tax. If somebody stays in a unit, most likely they're going to go shop in a store, eat at some restaurants, and there's sales tax from that. They'll buy gas in the gas station. And so it also helps economically with surrounding businesses, and overall we receive sales tax from that extra transaction that happens. And so, and as I mentioned, it helps other businesses. So there is some definite impacts, positive impacts tax-wise for the city for having transient rentals. One thing to take note of here also is the entire property must be rented, so there's not an ability to stay on the property and rent yet at the same time. You can't stay in one building and rent the other. It's renting the entire thing. It doesn't mean that every room in the home is accessible to whoever you're renting to. You could obviously lock that out if you wanted to. But you, It's not a two-dwelling property. It's a one-dwelling property. Really, the way our code is set up is these are in residential zones. We require two parking spaces. Most properties don't have a lot of extra parking. And so it really is a one-dwelling unit, and it's not set up for every room to be rented separately. That would be like a bed and breakfast. So, other discussion points. The general plan language discourages expanding the trot. So, and there's some reasons for that. It creates competition for existing units. So not only other nightly rental units, but just overall how many units are available in the community. And that's really point number three. The more transient rentals there are, it reduces the number of dwellings available for full-time residents. Also, they can be disruptive to the neighborhood. In most cases, we don't receive, historically, we haven't received a lot of complaints about short-term rentals, but that is on the rise lately.
Sure is.
Seems like we are dealing with that more and more.
Yeah. But there's also more and more places that are being short-term rented.
Yeah, we went quite a while without having any complaints, but that has changed as of late. A loss of sense of community if too many homes are rented. There's some communities where you end up with a very high percentage of homes that are rented, so Park City runs into this issue. And, you know, if people aren't living in their homes and there's new tourists all the time, then you kind of lose that sense of community. Also, even filling things like the Planning Commission on communities where there's a lot of rentals becomes more and more difficult, filling the boards. And so that is another reason why some cities, especially some along the West Coast, have completely stopped allowing short-term rentals. Cerritos is one of those, for instance. And so, because they feel like there's a lot of negative impacts that that the community deals with. What's quoted directly from our general plan is the bottom line here. It says, trod boundaries should not expand beyond current boundaries to help preserve available long-term housing supply and to help preserve Midway as a community filled with permanent residents that will help preserve Midway's community feel. So that's kind of the guiding light for us. General plan is not code. You do not need to follow what's in the general plan, but it is good planning practice to create a general plan and then follow that general plan. But it's not required by law. Some things to take note of with this property is it is contiguous to the C2 zone. It's walkable to restaurants, to parks, to stores. Just kind of the same things that we talked about with Marsing across the street. All of those things apply to this property just like they did for Marsing. And ultimately, the city council did approve Marsing because it was surrounded on that one on two sides and so close to commercial properties. This one is touching on one side, but again, it's right next to the commercial zone. So in that aspect, it's very, very similar to Marsing. So those are discussion points, just some findings for you to consider. And we have findings in support of the motion and findings against the motion, against the proposal. The proposed property is contiguous to the C2 zone and the trot. Again, there's very good accessibility to those commercial areas. Number two, transient rental units will help generate more transient rental taxes for the city and will help the city qualify for to collect the resort tax. And number three, the city has the ability to conditionally approve the proposal and require conditions that would not be possible for administrative action. So because it is a rezone, you could conditionally rezone it with some specific conditions. Number four, the city council is under no obligation to approve the proposal, but may do so if they find it will benefit the community. So city council approve, you would make your recommendation to the city council. And then number five, the applicants will need to apply for conditional use permit if the zone amendment is successful. So they still have that other step to go through, just like Marcin did in the last couple of months. Some possible findings for you to consider against the proposal. The proposed language in the general plan discourages the expansion of the trod because it could potentially reduce full-time residents' housing stock and could impact the feel of the community. And then number two, the city council is under no obligation to approve the proposal, but may deny it if they find it will not benefit the community. So there's a presentation for you on this item. We're becoming familiar with this issue, but I'm happy to try to answer any questions that you've got.
Forgive me, I was not here at the last meeting. Can you explain to me, did the previous expansion, did that pass positively from this board, and then obviously it was approved by the city council?
So the previous one being the one down on 3rd South owned by the Powers? Is that the one?
No, the one across the street.
That was approved.
So Marsing is kind of a different deal. They went through the rezoning process over 2 years ago, back in 2022.
Okay.
That was what this one's at this step in the process. This is the legislative action where you have broad discretion. Marsing just in the past 2 months came before Planning Commission, and they were at the point in the process where it was a conditional use permit. And really, there's not an option to deny that
there
type of conditional use permit. It would have to be very extreme safety circumstance, for instance, for us to deny a conditional use permit that just really didn't exist for that property.
Okay, I was trying to understand the thought process by going against the general plan.
But back 2 years ago when it came up in front of you on this issue, it's my understanding Planning Commission recommended against it, but City Council approved it.
That's correct.
This is true.
Just one clarification. I know that you can't rent out every room, but can the family occupy the premises while renting part of the premises?
Yeah, they really can, because it's really a single family property, and so a single family dwelling property. So yeah, you're renting the whole property. It doesn't mean you have to allow every room to be accessible to who you're renting to, but you couldn't have two groups staying on the property at once because it is a single family zone.
Yeah.
So that living space that's above the new garage is not habitable for permanent living?
It is habitable for permanent living. It's just if you rent the property, you could allow that to be used as part of the rental, or you could say that building's you're not allowed to use that building, but somebody else couldn't stay there.
And
but,
vice versa, if you rent that out, you cannot stay in your home.
Correct. Which is hard to enforce, right?
It's
so legally and per our code, you can't do that. It's a little tough to enforce.
Yeah, it's difficult to police every little thing that's going on, but that's how the code works because it's really not set up for two dwellings. Mm-hmm. And
really what that means, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's not two full kitchens, which means one has a kitchen, which means a gas stove, which is the only qualifier. The other one can have anything other, convection or a microwave, just not a gas stove.
So that's half of it. They can choose to have a full kitchen and accessory building, but that means they can't have a full bathroom. So you either choose the full bath or the full kitchen, one or the other, but you can't have both.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're right, you can have a lot of things in your kitchen, you just can't have the stove.
Yep.
How many housing units are included in the trod?
Good question.
So if you subtract the resort zones, because there's a whole lot of rental units at the Zermatt, for instance, and they're not kind of our normal single-family dwelling rentals. But if you just look at what's outside of either the commercial and resort zones, and properties that are zoned residential, like this one and like Marsing, there's not a ton of them out there. There are, we're probably talking a couple of dozen, maybe. It's probably in that range.
There's probably more than that. It's just some of the HOAs don't allow it. Right?
So are you asking how many are actually licensed? Or how many
possibly, no.
What they could be.
What could be.
So there's some developments.
Potentially there could be quite a few of them, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like the Cantons, for instance, the whole development could be nightly rentals. Same with Midway Village, same with Turnberry. But a lot of those HOAs do limit how many nightly rentals there are.
Correct.
And so, but actually licensed units, there's probably not more than a couple dozen of them out there in the residential zones.
And if the HOAs changed and no longer outlawed that, then those developments could apply. They're in the trot, so they could apply.
Okay. This might be a longer discussion, but if the HOA, if someone chose to say, I don't, we would not look to the CCNRs of the HOA to make a determination either, right? So there's no real teeth. It seems like there are no real teeth.
So what we enforce is a city code. Mm-hmm. They would have to enforce their own CCNRs.
Right.
They would, and so if somebody applied in, Turnberry, and Turnberry doesn't allow, we would still process the application, but it would be up to them to enforce their CCNRs just civilly.
If they chose to do
that.
Yeah, if they chose to.
Yeah.
So one comment I have, just, and this is probably, I probably should have been at the meeting at the city council. In my 5 years here, I've never had one person say, take me out of the trot.
Right.
Not once. Everyone wants to ask to be in the trot. And it's always, you know, either creating an island or an adjacent appendage and expanding the trot in some way. Just for people in this room and whoever may be listening, and for the record, I really would propose that we don't have any new additions or changes to the trot unless someone volunteers to leave the trot. So there's a set number, and then any new trot applicants have to wait for a vacancy. So in the old, you know, look, I'm in Los Angeles, they had these rent control laws, and you'd have these amazing apartments like in Santa Monica that were under rent control. You could be, you know, living on the beach for $500 a month because the record, you know, it contained, and so people would, you know, sublet it and things like that. The thing is if that apartment building ever went away or, you know, anything, it's completely gone because it was grandfathered in.
Yeah.
And so the idea being that it just, I would propose that for expansion of the trod discussions, that there is new code that we can create at the city council level that could maybe start here in the city, in the planning commission, that would limit what expansion to the trod looked like, and that a requirement to that would be one person, and maybe, you know, we send out a letter or however that is, but yeah, if you want to be in the trod and then eliminate yourself from the trod and then you meet these, then there's an opening for someone new to come into the trod. Not just keep always new people, always pushing to expand the trod. All of our meetings seem to be just people trying to come into the trod.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
And that's where I was going to, exactly the same place, to have a manageable ratio, right? And I don't know if that exists or if that was ever envisioned when the trod was developed, but that's my concern. Exact same concern.
Yeah.
I had a question. So there's a property manager that's in town. So I'm just saying 10 o'clock at night, noise is kind of continuing to accelerate next door. You're the neighbor to the Airbnb next door. What is the process for managing that?
Yeah.
Are the neighbors supposed to call the property manager? Are they supposed to call the police?
Yes.
And it's awkward to go over as a neighbor to someone's Airbnb people and complain to them.
Yeah.
So what is the process on that?
Yeah, the idea is that the local manager's here, so the neighbor would call the local manager and the local manager would take care of it. Otherwise, yeah, it would be calling the police or calling staff, you know, city workers. So it's set up to where the local property manager is supposed to handle those issues. And if there are issues that aren't taken care of, then the code does give us mechanisms to go in and try to fix those issues. And we can revoke the license in the end if the property manager's not doing a good job.
Is there a requirement to have the name of the property manager somewhere visible? Because, I mean, but probably what's going to happen is you're going to call the police.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the police is going to have to track down who the property manager is. Is that information on file with the police department?
Well, I've been thinking about this lately. What I think we need to do is every transient rental unit in town may be listed on our website, and that would have the property manager tied to that unit, so people would have accessibility to that number. Now, we need to think that through. There's some issue with that. But if we couldn't do it in that manner, then maybe it's posted on the structure in some way, so at least you'd know who to call in those situations.
Or maybe there is a list with the police, like you said. The other, as Michael said, traditionally we've had just a handful of local property managers, and it was kind of kept to a smaller number because our code requires that they have a physical presence and office in Midway in our commercial or resort zone, so you can't operate it out of the property that you're renting. So it's like you can't use that as your property address. What we're finding more and more of now, I'd say just even in the last 6 months, we've seen this huge increase of people kind of applying to be property managers themselves and renting space in town for an office to meet the code. I'm not sure they're necessarily here the way that our code envisioned them being here for when there's problems, but they technically meet the code. But they're making enough money doing overnight rentals that I'm assuming it's financially still better for them to pay rent for an office spot and to do this and not pay a property manager. So we're dealing with a little bit of growing pains and change in our usual property manager makeup.
Possibly they're renting an address as opposed to a physical space.
Yeah, we're fairly certain.
Fairly certain that's the case. Yeah. So we're actually in the process of revisiting this section of code. It'll probably be coming back to you fairly soon.
Yeah, in the next, probably in December.
Yeah.
That's when you'll see it.
Yeah, because we really have to address just some changes that happen with time. You know, for instance, somebody who lets you in with a key is probably a thing of the past with keypads and other stuff. So some things we have to kind of adapt with the times, and other things we have to adapt with how reality is changing, like this, that you can rent a space but not necessarily be there and maybe not meeting the need that we were hoping to find.
Great. Any other discussion from the Planning Commission?
I just ask one other question. So when you've expressed concern that there has been an increase in complaints coming to you, is that a sign that the property manager isn't handling the issue? And is that how this is coming to light, that this is an issue?
It seems like the complaints we've had haven't been the long-standing property managers. They've been newer property managers that maybe don't completely understand the system.
Or maybe aren't here.
Or maybe aren't here.
Right. So I think maybe a combination.
And so, and outside of this is illegal nightly rentals, and we do shut those down when we find them. We're constantly sending out letters shutting down the illegal ones around town.
But that number is rising as well, and yeah, we don't have them all. We rely a lot on community reporting for that.
Yeah.
And that's hard as well.
And then you did say if it becomes an issue, then you can ultimately revoke the license, is that what?
Yeah, the transient rental license we can revoke, that's correct. It's more difficult to revoke a conditional use permit, but that would stop the unit from being rented as if we revoke that transient rental license.
I guess, and too, my concern is that, I mean, I know the body here, before I had joined, had 100% voted to not to recommend the Marsing property, and then the council did. So if that maybe, say, we feel like might have not been what we would still do, I feel like, you know, the creep is beginning and it's not going to end, I think, if we keep doing the same, making the same mistake over and over. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay, this item is scheduled for a public hearing.
And we have the applicants here as well.
Perfect. So if anyone in the audience would like to come to address the Planning Commission, if you'd please come up to the microphone, state your name and address.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Planning Commission, for letting me come before you and speak this evening. My name is Wendy Richard. I live at 71 South, 200 West. My husband has owned this house for the past 30 years. As you may know, or as you do know, Chad, my neighbor, was allowed to do nightly rentals in the last council meeting. I sit adjacent to Harvest Cafe, which is a commercial lot. And we believe that, you know, our property would fit into that purpose as well. Over the past few years, Mark and I have invested approximately about 70% of our equity, transforming our property. If anybody's driven by our house in the past couple of years, it was a complete eyesore. We wanted to bring it up to Midway standards, and it's taken a lot over the past years to make that happen. In order to help us pay for these expenses, we hope that you will allow us to nightly rent our unit. We are totally both vested in the community. We love Midway. But in order to pay for our expense of making this house a part of the community and up to Midway standards. We would really hope that you take that into consideration, that we really need to do a nightly rental here and adjust the zoning for that. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michelle Kelly. I live at 145 West 100 South. I do want to point out before I give my remarks that there was a letter submitted by Jonathan and Julie Clegg in opposition of the trot. I did get that online, so I'm sure that you guys all have a copy of that as well. I am just wanting to express my opposition to propose the trot. I recognize the importance of tourism to our local economy, and I believe that expanding the district would have a significant negative consequence for our community's character, housing, stability, and quality of life. So all of the discussion points that you brought up, Mr. Hinke, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I wanted to say, so you did a great job. Midway's charm and appeal stem largely from its small-town atmosphere, open spaces, and strong sense of community. Increasing the number of transient or short-term rentals risks undermining these qualities by turning residential neighborhoods into commercial zones. Residents in affected areas have already experienced issues related to noise, traffic, congestion, and parking shortages. And I can say, living on 100 West, it has become a very dire issue with the traffic increase and the lack of parking. My front yard has become a parking lot. It's an annual Swiss Days every Friday and Saturday in front of my home. So, the short-term rental reduces the availability of long-term housing for local families and workers. This not only drives up housing costs, but also makes it more difficult for those who contribute to daily to Midway, teachers, public safety officers, service employees, those that live in the community that they serve. Rather than expanding the district, I urge the Commission to focus on enforcing existing regulations and exploring ways to balance tourism with community preservation. I just strongly urge you to reject the proposed trot expansion and look at prioritizing the policies that are already in place. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for pointing out the letter that the Cleggs did submit.
Yeah, so letters were sent out to all property owners within 600 feet of this parcel. We did receive that one written letter from the Cleggs, so that was included in the packet. If you click online, you'll see it.
And it's also... It's
I'm not sure it made the printout. Oh, is it? Great.
I didn't see it in our email.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it's the very last page in the packet.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Lynette Wilson. I live at 152 West 100 South. And I was at the request for the Marsings to add their property to a trot and objected to it to no avail. And I've objected to all of the Airbnbs that are within the 600 feet of my home for the reasons that Mr. Hanke explained. It's odd that so many people were excited to get into this trot, and my understanding is that none of them have actually submitted their application for their nightly rentals. My concern was that they had, and they haven't been paying the proper taxes, property taxes, which would mean that I was helping bear the cost for their business. And we all know that nightly rentals make a lot of money for the property owner, many of whom don't even live in the area. The fact that we need a trot when we have the Zermatt and the Homestead and all of the inns, the beautiful inns in this town, who I'm fairly certain, if they don't have their own shuttles, would benefit from the use of the free shuttle that we paid for in the county. So I don't believe that we really need nightly rentals in the neighborhood homes. Like I heard and have said before, it does take away from the feel of the community when you'll never know your neighbors. It's a beautiful home that they built. The property improvement is striking. It's very nice. And when you say it's a single-family unit, it's a little bit, I won't say dishonest, but I think misleading when you have a secondary unit that has a bathroom, and it will have a microwave, and it will have a little, probably a dorm fridge. That's better than my first house. So they will likely get more occupants available to that kind of property, which is a concern. I haven't recognized you all before. I have been up here before, but last week it was the city council that I expressed my concerns. One of the requests I had, or points of interest, was that the values of our properties, my home that I could afford when I came to hit Midway proper, I could not afford now. The state, I'm told, is the one who has the runs this, the tax, how the taxes work in market value. I believe it's a crime that I should be paying taxes on unrealized earnings, or whatever is unrealized value. And I'm hoping that they'll be able to get a county representative and a state legislator to one of our meetings to discuss that further, so that the community in whole can hear and see what maybe they don't realize, maybe they don't care. Of all the properties surrounding our block, there's, I believe, one secondary home, and it happens to be a beautiful house next to me. And he pays a lot of money in taxes for the use of that home that he comes to maybe twice a year. He's here every week maintaining it. It's absolutely gorgeous. But he's not asking to make money off of a community that we've all really... It's improved since I moved there. People are doing their lawns. They're improving the fascia of their house. We ourselves stayed within the over 100-year-old footprint of our home and renovated it so it could be a little up to date. We didn't add any square footage. In fact, we took away some. My husband and I think a couple of other neighbors don't bother coming anymore to the meetings because, like the planning board had recommended not to add any more trods, and the city council elected to add to the trod, they're afraid every time we come to object to Airbnbs, they've been approved. So at what point do we feel like we're being heard? That's my concern. My husband won't come anymore. I know a couple of the other neighbors who just know what the decision's going to be, and it's disheartening. My understanding also was the need for more tax revenue at the expense of our little community street neighborhoods is that the Amiali and other commercial properties are coming up. They're going to have nice high-end hotels and rooms available. I don't think we need to rely on ours. If I'm not mistaken, the gentleman at the end, Mr. Wilson, had mentioned it's going to be at least 6 years before you have to worry about how many residential units to rental units you have. And then I understood after the meeting, we call it a resort. It's beautiful. I didn't know we were actually a resort, that the city had to count on transient rentals in order to make whatever money they feel they have to make, and where those services are coming from and who's requesting them. Question I had last week was, because the mayor had said, people are asking us for these services. I said, what people? You know, if you have tourists coming in asking, oh, you need more parking, or you need public restrooms, or you need whatever. I've never asked for anything. I came to Midway and where I live to just live, not to ask a city to improve on things I don't use. And as far as, like Michelle said, her becoming a Swiss Days parking lot, I don't even go to Swiss Days anymore, because now instead of the town park, it's extending on every block, clear down to, I think, almost to the end of Midway now. Any commercial businesses have been approved to have press. It doesn't feel right to me. So, although they did make a beautiful property, I cannot, I have to object to adding to the trot. I don't think it needs it. Again, we don't have applications for people who are in it now. What use do we have for people, more people to be added to it? If anything, I would hope that we, as residents, get a petition going that says, can we have a moratorium on these things happening in our neighborhoods when there are hotel areas who pay for security and pay for all the amenities that a person would come to Midway for. They don't need to be in a neighborhood, in my opinion. Anyway, so what I have said before still stands, and tonight I appreciate your time in listening, and I would like to, I guess I should mention, if I'm not mistaken, I was driving down the highway and saw a banner of somebody running for city council, and it ironically said, wanting to preserve Midway. I hope that person, I don't know what their meaning of preserve Midway means, but it's a little offensive when they continue to authorize and accept this kind of business in Midway. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Does the Planning Commission have any comments to the applicant or anything before we close the public hearing?
I have a couple comments. I've said this before, but I'll restate it again. It's good timing. I wished I would have been at the meeting, the last city council meeting. Enough said. Michael, what is our current, the hotels, what are their occupancy running at? Are they still at 25% or more?
So I can't say exactly what it is, but I think it's well above 25% right now.
Okay.
So it was low for a while, but my understanding is that it has risen, but okay. I couldn't give you the exact numbers.
But not sold out, not maximum occupancy, you know, I don't know. And it doesn't really matter. I think the point is that, you know, a lot of times the resorts that are actual resorts, not people's communities, are underutilized because people are, you know, they want a house, I totally get it, or, you know, they want to be, you know, in a nightly rental that's, to be totally honest, is cheaper, right? I mean, they're cheaper. So, you know, look, the Trod is, I'm sure points were made, I think, belies our resorts. New Ameyale coming in, the Homestead, and they're revamping. I don't need to list them all, but I'm sure if they're not sold out, they should be. They should be sold out. All of them should be totally sold out. The other one is, that always comes up, is a lack of affordable housing. Because there's not enough rental units in Midway, because people are using the houses for nightly rentals if they're available, instead of having it be a short-term rental with walkability to your place. Guys, your house is absolutely beautiful. It would make an amazing long-term rental. I know you probably make more money as a short-term rental. That's why everyone wants to do it. Again, no one's coming, not in my tenure here, ever to say, I want to be removed from the tribe. I hope I see that day. But it doesn't happen because it makes more money. I totally understand. Anyways, I just some points I needed to make for the record.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. Further discussion from the Planning Commission.
Well, I do agree that it's beautiful. I mean, we drive down that road when we go out to Soldier Hollow, and it's interesting because usually there's never anyone on that road, but the traffic has increased quite a bit on that road in the last summer, I think. But we've watched and enjoyed the improvements taking place, and it's really beautifully done. I'm kind of wondering, it's a shame that if you're renting it out, I don't know where you're going to be living. And you won't be living there, but I don't know.
We were hoping to do that, but we're told we were unable to have it separate. So that was the initial plan, but we're not allowed to do that.
Oh.
And I can't, I'm not going to, I need to, it's not that I want to, I'm not trying to get rich on the property. I'm trying to keep the property.
Yeah.
We're in survival mode. Either we nightly rent or we have to sell it. Those are the options.
So I'm sorry about that, because it is really beautiful, and it's a great, fun location. But I did have a little question, and just hypothetically.
To go back to that, sorry, my husband and I have only been married a short time. Mark's been up here for 30 years. So I still have my home in Salt Lake City that I raise my children in. So we have that option to go there. It's not like I have these multi-million dollar homes everywhere. It just worked out that, you know, I was a single woman for 20 years and then met my husband. We were married 10 years, so I didn't sell my home. So we're not going to be out on the street. The idea was that we could still stay in Midway because we don't want to leave. You know, and every chance we get, we'll be back here once we get that mortgage paid. I don't want to have it rented every single night. I'm just trying to hold on to the house. Mm-hmm. That's the whole goal, is just to stay in Midway.
Appreciate that. I know, because I kind of feel bad. It's like, oh, you have this gorgeous house you just redid, and now you're just going to rent it out.
Yeah.
And you don't get to
trust me. Yeah.
One thing I do wonder, I expressed already my concern about creep. We were for a little while next to a home that was renting out their basement on an Airbnb program. Is that allowed in residential areas if the people are living upstairs?
No, that is not allowed.
Okay. Well, I'm not telling you where I live. They actually quit doing it, but it was, and everyone that stayed there was very nice and respectful and everything, but it was a little unsettling every time I was outside to have stranger people, you know, strangers out in the backyard doing stuff all the time, and it's kind of like, huh, that's funny, I know that they don't belong to them, and then we kind of figured out what was going on, and anyway, they ended up not doing it any longer because it was just too much work, but I kind of got a taste for what that feels like to have an Airbnb next to me, and I didn't really enjoy it. It was kind of like, well, I signed up for living in a neighborhood where I know my neighbors, and we, you know, we share this and that back and forth, and it's consistent, and everyone's all on the same team, and it just sort of was off-putting to me to have strangers going down the stairs next to our master bedroom window that I didn't know, and it was different cast of characters parading through, and even though they were even respectful, I never felt like I had to call a property, you know, call anyone out. It was just kind of like, this isn't what I signed up for in my neighborhood. So to me, that just changes the whole vibe, I think, of the community. And I feel like, I think the commission here regrets the Marcin property. And I don't know that that's the reason why we should do that, you know, go down that road again. And I that's my concern. I just don't think it's a road that we should keep going down. That's just my
question. Laura?
No, I'm just getting ready for...
Ready for motion if someone wants to make a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion that... excuse me. I will make a motion that we recommend denial of Mark and Wendy Richard and Dallin Tullinger's request for a land use map amendment of the Midway City land use map, requesting that their parcel located at 71 South, 200 West be added into the transient rental overlay district. The parcel is 0.24 acres and is zoned in R17, and that we use the staff proposal findings against the proposal, noting that this is in opposition to the general plan language discouraging the expansion of the trod.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Andrew?
Aye.
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 So an aye is?
Voting against recommendation.
Aye.
Okay. That passes. This item is only a recommendation from this body to the Midway City Council. They have the ultimate decision. It'll be on an agenda item a future date.
Yeah. Third Tuesday in November is what we're looking at for that city council public hearing.
Is that the week of Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving's the fourth week.
It's the week before
Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, we will now go to item number 4 on the agenda. Jack Sullivan, agent for Wasatch Springs Management Holding LLC, jointly owned by Randy Krantz and Dennis Webb, is applying for conditional use permit, CUP, and local consent for an alcohol dispensing establishment. The CUP is required because of an ownership change, but the alcohol licensing for Zermatt Resort will stay the same. The Zermatt Resort currently has a bar, restaurant, and banquet license. Zermatt is located at 784 West Resort Drive and is in the resort zone.
Okay, you've got me for this one. And I don't think we have the applicants here tonight. And it doesn't look like we have anybody else on this one. So the Zermatt is obviously has been operating with a conditional use permit for alcohol sales for quite some time. This application is being occasioned because they have a change in ownership, number one, and they're also changing the nature of their licensing. So before they had bar licenses and restaurant licenses, it's my understanding from the applicant that they're applying for a general hotel alcohol license, and then their restaurants would have sub-licenses under that one license. So change in ownership and change in licensing. Oh, okay, maybe they're online.
Possibly.
Thank you. We have somebody online, so maybe that's them. So by way of background, again, they've had conditional use permits here, and they've been operating their restaurants and bars. They're changing to a hotel liquor license. Their application described their request as, quote, property already exists and is licensed. We're just filing new licenses under new ownership. Next one. The property's in the resort zone, which where restaurants and hotels are permitted, but to serve alcohol, the state requires a conditional use permit and local consent. If it's approved at the city level, the applicant will still have to apply through the Utah Department of Alcohol Beverage Services. The conditional use permit, as we've been talking about, is an administrative action, but per state code, the approval of the ability to sell alcohol is a legislative act, so the city has broad discretion in that decision. Tourism does generate businesses and taxes, and some might argue that limiting alcohol licenses could inhibit tourism in the city, but you do have the city does have broad discretion in this. These are a list of past alcohol licenses approved. We've got Lupita's, Cafe Galleria, Zermatt, Homestead, 7-Eleven, Ridley's, Ridley Market, which had become Market at Midway and Market Express, Blue Boar Inn, Midway Mercantile, Lola's, The Corner, Heirloom, and now Harvest.
Harvest doesn't have one yet.
Harvest doesn't have one yet?
No.
I thought they applied.
They haven't applied yet.
I'm so sorry.
Harvest came before us.
I thought they did. Yeah.
About 2 months ago.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Go, I'm losing that, sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you all, because I thought I was losing it, yeah.
No, when it went from Corner to Heirloom didn't apply.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe Heirloom.
We have a history of alcohol licenses there, that's for sure.
We do.
Those bottom
three. Yeah, but you're right, they did apply for it.
Michael made a mistake.
I did.
I love it when that happens. Could we note the time and the date, please?
I have no memory of that.
I've got it.
This is why he's going. He's taking the next 2 days off. You know, it's deserved. Okay, thank you for pointing that out and for justifying me, Andy. I appreciate it. Okay, next one, please. And if there's any questions, just say it. Past conditions, generally we have a condition that no alcohol-related signage is visible on the exterior of the building or on the inside that's visible from the outside. So in this case, including from Resort Drive and Homestead Drive. Next one. This is that whole analysis that we have to go through every time that you review one of these conditional use permits. This is by statute and this is by code as well. These are the findings that you have to make. So I'm going to go through these here and then I'm just going to tell you that the proposed findings are basically summaries of this. So I'm not going to go in as much detail into the proposed findings because we're going to do it now. So the first thing that you have to look at and decide is whether it's conditionally permitted within the land use title and would not impair the integrity and character of the intended purpose of the subject zoning district and complies with all the applicable provisions of this code. Again, we haven't seen a significant impact on this. It's been being used as this. We would say that, again, they're going to still need to comply with the code, including special events and things like that. Two, the proposed use is consistent with the general plan. Again, no issues have been identified. It's been being used this way. Three, the approval of the conditional use or special exception permit for the proposed use is in compliance with the requirements of state, federal, and Midway City or other local regulations. Again, the applicant's going to have to get approval through the city for the conditional use permit and local consent, and then we'll have to comply with all state licensing through UDEVS. Four, there'll be no potential significant negative effects upon the environmental quality and natural resources that could not be properly mitigated and monitored. Again, we've seen no issues over the past however many years they've been operating. 5, the design, location, size, and operating characteristics of the proposed use are compatible with the existing and future land uses with the general area in which the proposed use is to be located and will not create significant noise, traffic, or other conditions or situations that may be objectionable or detrimental to other permitted uses in the vicinity or adverse to the public interest, health, safety, and convenience or welfare of the city. That's a little mouthful. The proposed use and associated traffic appear unchanged. It's in the resort zone, and it's consistent with the uses that are allowed in our resort zone. Next one, 6, the subject site's physically suitable for the type and density and intensity of the proposed use. Again, it's been being used that way, and the conditional use permit was granted before. And 7, there are adequate provisions for public access, including internal and surrounding traffic flow, water, sanitation, and public utilities and services to ensure that the proposed use would not be detrimental to public health and safety. We have not identified detrimental impacts. If you among yourselves do, you can certainly make those findings. But this was based on staff review and the fact that they've been operating this way for quite some time. Any questions on any of those?
So the property has changed hands?
Partially. It's one of the owners stayed the same, and then there's a new owner as well.
Okay, so because there's one common denominator, they're still allowed to serve alcohol.
Is this
in limbo?
It's interesting. So they were operating under a current license, right, that expires at the end of this year. And actually it expires sooner than that. They said that it expired maybe the end of this month. Does that sound like what they said? That it expired the end of this month. So actually we had a Zoom call last week because they would really like not to have a gap between one license and the next license because they have to go through the procedure with going in front of you and then going in front of city council. So the state has, there is statutory language that allows for a conditional use or a temporary use pending you going through the steps to get local approval. So we had a Zoom call last week because the applicant was asking that the city sign basically a local consent, which is not something we do until after we go through the conditional use process. But in speaking with the state representative and everybody on that call, what the state representative from DABS basically said is, if you, city, acknowledge that we have this application, we know that they're applying, we haven't gone through our process yet, but we're just saying we acknowledge that they're going through the process, that's enough for us to get a temporary one. That's not what their form says. So again, it's a little semantics. So we asked, can we change your form to say that? And they said yes. So the mayor did sign that form just basically acknowledging that they're going through the process, but we included language to say final approval. We're not weaving our process. Final approval is still dependent upon getting a conditional use permit and local consent. So I think that takes care of that limbo process, but you're exactly right. They were facing that limbo process.
And so they're changing from what I would call a master license, or they're going to go to
a master license.
And then have subs under that. So we're only approving the master, and then they're free to do whatever they want. Does that include outside alcohol on the property, or is it just in the physical structures of the resort?
Do you know that, Michael?
So,
could they have a beer garden outside?
They couldn't have a beer garden outside.
That's a separate permit
from the city for that to happen.
So there's still restrictions under the master. It's not just
work on the property. As for them being able to buy a closed container and take it off-site and drink it, I don't think that's part of this.
These are banquet
and restaurant applications.
Right, so that's my understanding.
So it would be consumption on site.
So their little cafe where they sell baked goods cannot, under this umbrella license, start selling alcohol to take to your room.
I don't think that's what
that would be a different use, okay. And they haven't asked for that.
It seems to be a big umbrella license,
right.
What they're able to do.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a very good question, and we will get clarification from that. I will get clarification from that.
Yeah,
but my understanding is, and I don't know if the applicant's online, But my understanding is no, that that wouldn't change, that that would be a different request that you're asking for.
So this will just cover their banqueting, restaurants, and bar?
Basically the same services that they, as it was explained to me by the applicant, the same services that they're doing now, their bar, their restaurant, it's just they're going to do it under a general license with sub-licenses rather than separate licenses for each one.
Okay.
Yes, Ken?
So I'm just trying to understand the need for this. So the is the existing license expiring, or because there's a change in ownership, there's a need for it? Which is it?
I think it's a little both. I think it was expiring toward the end anyway, but I think the problem with applying to extend it or to renew it is they have a new owner, so they have to do it. They have to do a new license application.
So, okay, so is the new owner in place, or are they in due diligence pending this among...
It sounded to me that the new owner is in place.
He is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the deal is done.
Yeah, because that's the other thing we discussed with them when they were facing this limbo situation is, why don't you just renew your license under the existing and put off the change of ownership for a while? But that was not an option, so I'm assuming it was a done deal.
Michael, do we know if the applicant's on?
So I don't recognize the name, but there's somebody on. I think by now they would have raised their hand if they were going to make some comments, so I don't think they're online.
Any other questions that anybody has? Okay, could you go on to the next room, Michael, please? Oops, let's go down. Okay, so the proposed findings are basically, the first several are just what we went through, that it's conditionally permitted, it's consistent with the general plan. We're not aware of any requirements of laws that it doesn't meet. We're not aware of environmental quality, negative effects. Next one, Michael, please. It's compatible with the existing and future land uses. It's physically suitable site. Next one, Michael. Thanks. And then we added a couple. This number 7 was already what you have to find by law. There's adequate provision for public access. The 8th finding is just that the license would allow the sale of alcohol at the Zermatt Resort. The state does regulate this type of alcohol license, and special events on site would be required to comply with Midway City Code. So beer gardens and things like that would be separate. A couple of proposed conditions that we discussed and I put up here for you. One is the one that we said, that no alcohol-related signage visible on the exterior of the building, or if it's on the inside, visible from the outside, including resort and homestead drives. And that signage would have to comply with Midway City Code. You can put any conditions that you would want to on that. Any questions?
Sorry, one more. So it's really a simple renewal rather than an incremental ask.
Yeah, it's a renewal in a different form. It's a renewal, but really not a renewal. It's in a different form because they've had change of ownership. Yeah.
Yeah, they already have alcohol there. They do.
I mean, I don't see changes. You know, they're just basically saying we plan to use it for the same use that we've used before. So we don't have anything to suggest otherwise.
Yeah.
I have a little question. It's not relevant necessarily to this, so I'm sorry to take the time, but just a quick. So I'm just curious, are there different levels of licensing? Because I think
there are.
Okay, because what you're getting at Mercantile is quite different from what you're getting at Lola's.
Right, or what you're getting like a store where people are taking it to leave. So yes, there's all different kinds of licenses. And I am not an expert on them.
So I do know a little bit about them. So there's club licenses, for instances. I only know because I have processed these.
Sure.
But restaurant licenses, only a certain percentage of the sales can be for alcohol, for instance. So somebody can't come in and just buy beer or any type of alcohol. They have to purchase a meal. Mm-hmm. And then the overall percentage of sales for that restaurant has to be under a certain limit for alcohol. So restaurants can't become a bar. And so there's limitations on the state level making sure that happens. There's a limited number of like club licenses or bar licenses in a region. So a lot of times those are the ones that are in high demand, because there's not enough of those to go around for the demand. And so as soon as one bar or club shuts down, usually there's another one waiting to take that one limited license. So there's specifications, and if there's a a closed container license, like at 7-Eleven, for instance, you couldn't go there and drink anything on site. You have to take that off site.
Can and you so go back to that all list? Regulators.
Yeah.
Because most, several of those don't exist anymore.
That's correct.
Right. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Lupita's, well, Lupita's moved.
Yeah, Lupita's is gone. Cafe Galleria is still there. Zermatt still is there. Homestead, 7-Eleven's there. And this is obviously one of those closed container ones where you buy it and you take it. Ridley's Market is now the Market.
And the Corner Heirloom are Harvest.
Yeah, this is all one building and so Harvest.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
So like at Mercantile, for instance, you can't just go and get a drink. You have to order food to go with the drink?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't try to just go there and drink
that's
through
it.
The nice.
Okay. Just
don't.
Tell
Brad.
That's all.
Yeah,
tell
Brad. Any other questions from anybody? This one was, is this it for public hearing?
I don't think
no.
it is.
Yeah, this one's not a public hearing.
No, it's here, not. Sorry. It's going to go to City Council for public hearing.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? Is anyone ready to make a motion? Laura, welcome back.
All right. I'm recommending approval that Jack Sullivan, agent for, am I reading this? Yes, for Wasatch Springs Management Holdings LLC, that we recommend approval for a conditional use permit and local consent for an alcohol dispensing establishment license / hotel liquor license for property known as the Zermatt Resort and located at 784 Resort Drive in Midway, and that we incorporate all of the staff findings and recommendations as part of that motion.
So conditions two?
Yes.
That good? Okay, great. Thanks.
So motion by Laura. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion by Laura, second by Kim. Any further discussion? Andrew?
Aye.
Laura?
Aye.
Kim?
Aye.
To Ellen?
Aye.
Andrew?
I make a motion that we adjourn this lovely meeting that has been so beneficial for all of us.
Is there a second?
Aye. Oh, second. Yes.
We are adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for dinner.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank Melissa. She was awesome.
And welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, yeah.
Are we off?
We are.
Hold on one sec.